should start, and why should the people who are here not get the full benefit of the time that we have? Oh, Rav Stein, we had spoken about sending out some more sources. Not yet?
Have it today.
Have it today? Okay, good. So I'll talk about some of those things now. We had discussed yesterday some interesting stories about the prenup and some of the opposition to it. When I had mentioned that Rav Yashiv Zatzal never really sent out any official rebuttal. So there were two stories I wanted to tell you. One, I don't think I told you last time, but again, you have to forgive me if I repeat. They had a case with someone from who belonged to a Rabbi Avi Weiss Shul, who he went to the Riverdale, was engaged to a fellow who was learning in Yeshiva Farakwe. How that happened, I'm not exactly sure, but Rabbi Avi Weiss would not let her go to the chuppah without a prenup. And the person in charge of the chassan side was not Rabbi Pear himself. Well, I think I mentioned you last time, has his own prenup. Am I correct? Did I mention that last time? No? Rabbi Pear Shalita, the Rosh Shiva Farakwe, has a prenup which is found in Igles Moshe in three different versions. I kid you not. This is one paragraph of tshuva, has three versions. One's in the big Igles Moshe, one's in the small Igles Moshe, and one is the original, which I've seen copied. It was like neither of them. Pachkarai over there. But that prenup just says they're going to go to a Bezdin in case there's a problem. They'll go to Bezdin. I think they even mention which Bezdin they're going to. That could be very helpful. Be very helpful. Whether it's enforceable by American law, I don't see why not. If they do it properly, arbitration document, right? We agree to go to a certain rabbinical tribunal for their decision in these kinds of matters. Could be very, very helpful. Of course, the Bezdin may lack some of the teeth that they need to get things done, but they didn't have ways of getting things done even without so many teeth. No, with their gums. But they can get things done. So here, meanwhile, Rabbi Weiss insists on the Bezdin of America prenup. So the person who was in charge was his assistant, Rabbi Kaufman, who has since become the Rosh Yeshiva of Waterbury. Very fine person. I never had spoken to him before. He called me up. He is the son-in-law of Rabbi Fievel Cohen. Ah, that's the key part of the story. So he says, the Shver said maybe Rabbi Yoshev has certain objections, and he wants to know that maybe how serious are they? Can he be part of this wedding with the prenup? So I wrote a letter to Rabbi Fievel Cohen, whom I had spoken to about, I think I told you last week, I had spoken to about a few years before. Maybe I didn't mention that. I did. So now this is like 3 years later, and I wrote to him. What I had discovered in the interim was some of Rabbi Yoshev's issues. I think there were four issues. I wrote the letter. I faxed it to him. So I have the original. I still have in my house. One, he was at the Asmacht issue, which we'll come back to. Two was he thought they wouldn't understand what they were signing. That's already printed in his name by Rabbi Gartner in the original article of Iyot Tavshin Nebches, which is hard to understand for two reasons. One, they do understand it. All right, they come fight about it. I had a case where there were three lawyers among the four parents, and they were fighting back and forth for who knows how long until they finally signed them. And so what? If you don't know it, it's binding anyway. You ever sign your lease in your apartment? You ever look at all the fine print? Who read the lease? But the bottom line is the landlord stacks it in his favor. You can't. I didn't read it. You didn't read it. It's too big. You didn't understand. Then he said he's going to go to secular court, which is not true. He can go to secular court only for enforcement, which is 100% mutter. Then the strangest of all the four objections was, well, he's going to end up giving a get where he doesn't really want to. What does that mean? A guy has chayv mezonos mikra din. He doesn't really want to give a get, but he doesn't want to pay the money. That I never understood. I wrote the four things to Rabbi Cohen, and he communicated with the son-in-law. It's okay. You can do this. You can do it. Now, I knew from the beginning Rabbi Cohen couldn't object on the basis of Asmachta, because he has a whole book called Midor L'Dor. Midor L'Dor is a book about Yerusha. about a thing called the Shtar Chatzi Zocher. Anyone know what that is? In the old days, it wasn't quite egalitarianism, but instead of having the sons get all the Yerusha and the daughters get nothing, which is what the Din HaTorah, they wanted to be somewhat liberal, and this is the Renaissance, so somewhat liberal, and give a woman a half a share. Hence, Shtar Chatzi Zocher. But how do you do that? You can't give a Yerusha Mechayim. It doesn't work. So the trick was, and it's printed, it's found in the Ramah, two places, Evan Ezen Choshen Mishpat. What you do is as follows. You make an obligation. Let's say you have two sons and two daughters. You obligate yourself to your daughters to the tune of $1 billion, or whatever is necessary to be more than you have. Most of us, $1 million will suffice. Ten. Whatever, as much as you need. And so now when the person passes away, all the money is going to go to the daughters, not to the sons, because they're creditors who have first dibs on his money. Then you write a condition. You write that if the sons will give the daughters a half a share, then your obligation is null and void. That is a classic Shtar Chatzi Zocher found in the Ramah. Gewalt. Asmachta. It's an asmachta. Right? What does that mean? That the person obligates himself to a humongous sum, $1 million, but it's conditional. It's conditional, right? If the sons will, quote unquote, play ball and give a half a share to the daughters, then it's null and void. If they won't, then it's effective. It's a classic case of asmachta. So Rabbi Cohen overcomes the asmachta problem in his sefer with the trick that we suggested last week. A kinyan me achshav bebezin choshev. So I knew he couldn't come out against this because he's coming out against his whole book. The whole book's based on, the whole sefer is based on that one premise, which I think is accepted in the halacha. Notwithstanding Rabbi Yosef's protestations. As I told you before, I think Rabbi Yosef is correct in Shitas HaRambam, but the Mechaba is against. Fine. Good. So the question then becomes, if Rabbi Yosef was so much opposed, why didn't he say something? He never did. So I think I know the answer. Rabbi Yosef has a few volumes, but he printed the first two volumes of the most significant volumes of his Kovetz Tshuvos that were printed in his lifetime with his blessing. And they were all taken from places which he had actually written with his own hand. Rabbi Yosef said, "Don't trust anything you hear in my name, unless you either heard it from me yourself or if I wrote it in my own hand, because they're contradictory psukim from him all over the place." Unreliable things in his name. Doesn't mean it's always unreliable, but they missed a point here, they twisted a little there. Because, you know, if you ever seen him in action, it was shoot. You can either misunderstand either side. Either way, I was there once. I didn't think that the question, I didn't think Rabbi Yosef understood what the question was. And I don't think he questioned once what the answer was. I was shooting back and forth. Anyway, so I think it's Tshuva Kuf Samach Gimel, if I'm not mistaken. Aleph and Beis. So in Bayes, I think he says that he has a psak, which you mentioned last week, that is a problem of smachta by eschayvus, even according to the Rambam, and therefore you can't, it's not enforceable. But in Aleph, he writes the following fascinating question. Every Tosefus Ksuba should be an asmachta. Have you been in a wedding recently? Who's been in a wedding in the last year? Raise your hand. Did you read the Ksuba? You read the Ksuba, yeah? Had a Tosefus Ksuba, host of delay, old Mesmeis Kukim Kesef, sir. How can that be binding? It's a classic contingency obligation. If he'll die or divorce her, she'll get the money. And if she dies first, she won't get the money. It's a classical case of asmachta, contingency obligation. That's his cash. So let me tell you a secret. There's a way out of this kasha. I have a long letter from Zalman Nechemya, who responded to Rabbi Bleich's article, which I referred last week. And he started writing it, wrote a page and two thirds, and then put lines through it and sent it to me anyway. It's at the end of the real tshuva. The page and two thirds, he tries to demonstrate that it can't be a problem of asmachta, precisely from this question of how can every Tosefus Ksuba work. He always used our prenup as a Tosefus Ksuba. It's a Tosef and Ksuba, as you keep saying. It's Tosef and Ksuba. I can obligate myself to more money if I want, and then that's it. What's the problem? But then he crossed it out because he wrote on the bottom of that second page, wait a minute. Maybe the Pshat and the Ksuba is not the way we just constructed it. That the man accepts upon himself an obligation which will take effect if and when he dies or divorces her. That's not the Pshat. The Pshat is that the Ksuba is effective immediately. The Ksuba is an absolute unconditional obligation. Then what is the time of death or divorce? That's just that's a payment schedule. A guy can say, I owe you $1 million, I'll pay you in a year. So that's what he's doing. I owe you 200 zuzim, skukim, and I'll pay you when? Upon death or divorce. It's not like a... So the Yashiv didn't go for that, obviously, because if he would have given that answer, he wouldn't have raised this question. He, of course, from the Erech Shai answers this question. Erech Shai, one of the big gedolim. What did Erech Shai answer? Fascinating answer. Asmachtik and undo a kinyan. The Gemara is in Kedushin and Ksubis. Oh, she was on Kedushin this, you know? What daf you have to rabbi? Daf test? Not test? You passed test. Good, so you passed it already. Gevaldik. So the Gemara, I think it's daf test. Gemara says, Kamat and osam the bincha, kamat and osam the bitcha, om the vikitshu, hein hein adrama manikna ba'amirim. Don't need a kinyan. So Rabbi Shai answered, if you don't need a kinyan, it's not going to be undone by asmachta. Asmachta lo kanyan. If you need a kinyan, you don't need a kinyan. That's Rabbi Yosef's answer. If that's the case, what's a prenup? A prenup is in a certain sense a kind of a Kamatanus, it's a prenuptial, like the Hain and Adram nicknamed by Mira. And that's why, even if it isn't Asmachta, Kunt of Yosha's own logic, it should be good. That's my theory, untested. I understand that. They make a Kenyan. But the question becomes. No. So what Rabbi Stein is suggesting, a different answer to Rabbi Erech Shai's question. Is that every ksuba is a kinyan me'achshe v'bezen choshev? Who's a bezen choshev? The Messiah Kedushin? A bezen choshev? They don't spell it out in the ksuba. It says the lo kasmachta, that it does say. But lo kasmachta is boilerplate. Although I think I mentioned, did I mention to Rabbi Timbalist last time they wrote the letter, that one page letter that's just printed in Tvuno, say that?
It's from the beginning.
Huh? Right, but they just printed now. It just came out last month. When I was in Israel, I got a copy of something called Tvunos. Rabbi Gardner printed a letter, Rabbi Timbalist, one-page letter, which was sent to him, which I had the copy. He didn't know it. I had it. It ended up in my file. I gave it to him, and he printed it. Well, maybe, whatever it is. And there he says that A, Rav Zalman Nechem is good the way it stands, and B, if you add another tweaky line, which is Kvan Nekneset Gdola, and Kvan Nedivrei Gaon, B'li Shem Cholek, that'll completely overcome the asmachta problem according to those posts. So there are ways out of this problem. I just wanted to bring it to your attention before we go away from this particular subject. Okay? I also mentioned to you, I think last time, about the idea of a waiver, of a pre-nuptial waiver being too early, right? You have to be between Erisin and Nisuin. And how do you get around that one? So if you saw, remember the expression in the prenup, I shall be deemed. I shall be deemed to have repeated it at a later time. There's also an interesting question whether that works, and I want to just show you a couple of the Marma comments. I think you'll probably get the copy from Rabbi Stein Shalita during the week when I finish it. So there's an interesting question again. there are always typos. So the Gizmar's expression is because of the Oda Arusa. So the Ran says, only by Oda Arusa, the Shaykh Bakhtsas. Avakodam Lechain, Eno Shaykhus bin Choser Klal, Silukulav Klum, and the Ramah passes this way, Simon Sadi Beis. So how can you do it earlier? So I think I mentioned Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein wanted to be done under the Chuppah, but that's never done that way, never. And it makes things worse, the Shaykh Paskins and Simon Samuel Rav. Sivkot Kuflam Adala, then nowadays, that you get married under the chuppah, you can't be mistaken. There's no time. Right? that's what the impression is conveyed by the Dake Moshe as well in Simon Samar Beis. He says, nowadays, the brochas are not said before the Chalos Nisuin. Wow. That's an amazing song. When is the Nisuin? When? It's a question, of course, because that's a fascinating thing. What does that mean? So, I mentioned it, but Usher Weiss held this way, and therefore there's nothing to do. You have to go a silik. No, I mentioned it, right? Do silik outside the chuppah and then walk under the chuppah. Right? Did we went through that? Oh. But the Chasam Sofer says it in the Tshuva, the meaning of Frankfurt the mind, and the Chavas Yor, Simon Nun Gimel agrees with it. You're misalik yourself between the Birchas Erisim and the Birchas Nisuin. Because even according to the Mandaba, that Tchilas Chuppah completes the Nisuim, you have to have Das that the Chuppah should do it. If you don't want it, it doesn't work. It's no different than Bia Achar Kesef, Shalom L'Shem Nisuim, so Lo Gamra Bia Liyarsha. So here the Kisha B'Tabas, and if he wants the Chuppah at the beginning to do it, nonetheless, without the Brach, he doesn't want it. He doesn't want it. He wants it to be after the brachas. Because he wants to do the siluk then. So he doesn't want to have the mind to finish it until after the sheva brachas. That's the meaning of Frankfurt the mind. So he's me against Rabbi Moshe Weiss, like me. But Rabbi Stein already passed that feud also, undoubtedly. Famous Gemara, right? Kolabol dat al Gemara bia. So Tosis quotes from Rabbi Nissen Gaon. That's only by Erisin, Kiddushin. This nigga because of Shtar B'Biyah. By Nisuin, not. Why? So my Rebbe, the Rebbe Soloveitchik explained, Rabbi Shechta Shlita quotes it in his Eretz Tzvi. It's probably in the Shirma Kiddushin too, I imagine. I'm not daf, I'm proud to be there. That Kiddushin require what we call Das. Das is a halakhic term. It's a very... Kiddushin requires a higher level of das. You need an edikim for it, as Reb Chaim Brisker explained. You need a very high level of knowledge, we'll call it, of intent, in order for the kiddushin to be effective. Whatever requires das, its effect is postponable. You can give a woman a ring, have a kiddush sleep. Or im yeruduk shamim lemocher. It works because it requires das. You can tinker with it. You can delay its effect. You can make its effect conditional. So what do you mean kol bol adat like my bia? What is znus? So the first step of the bia is znus. We don't allow znus. Premarital relations, we don't allow that. So how can it be? So the answer is that the Maisa Kiddushin is from the beginning, from the Harah, from the beginning of the Bia. And the Chalos Kiddushin is postponed until the end of the Bia. Kolabol Dato Gemar Bia. Dato. Emphasis the word Dato. Das. When it comes to Nisuin, he may have the same thing in mind, but it won't help. Because Nisuin, Reb Chaim explained, does not require Das. It only requires Kavana. And what requires das can be made contingent or can be postponed. But what requires kavana is automatic. You can't postpone it, you can't make it conditional. To give a stark example, I think Rabbi Chanan may quote this in one of his explanations, which he goes with this mahalach. A guy will shech the behema ala tanai. If you pay me $100 for shechita, then have in mind it should be a kosher animal. Otherwise, not. Huh? Well, shechta now will become kosher tomorrow. You can't put conditions or delays on a shechita because it doesn't require das, only requires kavana. So to nisuin, only requires kavana, not das. And there are riots to this from different places as well. So therefore, even though he may have had in mind dato agamar bia, even in the case of a nisuin, it doesn't work. It's chal right away. Question becomes, then how can the Chasam Sofer say that under the chuppah, since he has in mind that the suan should not take effect till after the Sheva Brachas, that it works. How does it work? How does it work? It shouldn't work at all. The gentleman, let me tell you as follows. Aruch HaShulchan writes, listen very carefully because these words are very, very important. In Siman Nun Hey, I'll read it to you verbatim. Klolo Shadavar, Mikedin HaTorah Harei Nisuin, Bia L'Shem Nisuin, Noach, O HaHachor Olazeh. You know what? We spoke. This is basics. Kiddushin is Eshes Ish Bebeis Ha'av, or her own house, if the father's not alive, if she's already a Bulgaris. And Nisuin is Eshes Ish Bebeis Ha'bal. How do you define Beis Ha'bal? So if there's a Bia, the Shem Nisuin, by definition, that's Beis Ha'bal. What's the Hachana for that? What's the Hachana for that? Ezo Hachana Tali B'min Hoga, writes the Aruch HaShulchan. The Keren, the Koran, the Zeh Adav HaChupa, U'mevaruch and Abrochas, Nigmar Nisuin, V'tachlis Hachanas Kol HaChupas, Shemirega Zul V'elech Nichnasa L'Rishuso, U'muchon Lichyos Ima Kishvi Yishto. The definition of Nisuin, as I like to say it, it's not a Maisa, but a Matzav. Eish is Ish, Bebeis, Habal. It's not a halachic construct so much as kiddush would be, which requires das, requires real shlichus. Some of the mafarshim say that the Gemara has in ain't tnai b'nisuim, lesser b'shlichus, lesser b'tnai. So they ask a kasha, but the Mishnah has in ksubas mosar av l'shluchi abal. See, there is shlichus. That's not real shlichus. That's creating a massive. Once she's in the house of hands of shluchi abal, then she's considered nichnas al beiso. There could be a goyisha chauffeur who's driving her in the limo. You ever see these limos, these stretched limos at weddings? Meshuga. You ever see? Go to a wedding, there's for two people. They have all the gifts in the front. When I got married, I got married right across the bridge at Burnside Manor. Burnside Avenue, it's in the Bronx. And our apartment was in the Heights. Today, most people go with limos, they go to hotels. We had no hotel, nothing. And as a matter of fact, as the wedding is ending and everyone's leaving, I said, how are we getting home? What a car. It's ridiculous. So one of my friends drove us home. One of my single friends drove us home. But, you know, people gave us gifts. One of my aunts came with a whole set of pots and pans. They came to the wedding. We had a pot in the back of his trunk, and we're coming home in the back of his car laden with gifts, coming home after our wedding. Baruch Hashem, that's the way it should be. Okay? Nisa Lebeso, we came to our house, to our apartment. Now, look, I married off quite a few children. None of them did that. Not one went to a regular house. Some that couldn't help it. They were going to Israel. They were here. They said there was no. But men had an apartment. And today it's a new halacha. Got to go to a hotel. Okay, people have money for hotels. That's fine. Okay, whatever it may be. In any event, so let's go back to where I was. So the question that becomes, we talk about what's the definition of nisuin. The nisuin is a hachana to the chuppah, which is a hachana for the bia. It's an act. So I had no limo. I had, Baruch Hashem, a Jewish man drove me and my wife to the house. Okay, but they have these mos av l'shluchi abal, could be a goyish limo driver. And shlichus yakum. No, it's not a shlichus, it's not like a kedushin or a kak. No, it's creating a masav. She came into his house. No chesaron. And for that very reason, they cannot make any tanai. Ain't tanai ben nisuin. Oh. So the question becomes, the same way as you cannot postpone the chalos nisuin, if you had a tchilas bia, by saying you wanted to take effect at the end, my Rebbe's pshat in the Mor Kedush Nafiyud Rav Nissen Gon, so how can you do with respect to a chuppah? Once the chuppah happens, it happened. You can't postpone its effect. That's my kasha. So I'll answer you as follows. Just imagine, in the olden days, they had a kiddushin, and 12 months later, when nisuim. And nisuim was a chuppah. Okay? Let's say, this couple is now, we can't use the word engaged. That time the rabbi said engaged, I tell you that story? I never ever chep a mesada kiddushin. He can make mistakes galore, I don't chep him. I'll make his mistakes, I'm going to tell him what to do. It's not for me. I don't consider myself to be significant enough to, even though there are glaring errors. As once at a wedding where the man's a Rebbe in this institution, and it was a Kohen, and he forgot that he didn't know the basics. We spoke about it last week or the week before. You have to put a Kohen each and every time, right? You can't just say Chaim ben Shimon a Kohen. In other words, Chaim and Shimon HaKoyin, but then you have to write Chaim HaKoyin, not just Chaim. He was just Chaim, left out HaKoyin four times. I didn't go over to him. Okay, it's not so bad. Once and only once that I remember I had to go over to one of them, I couldn't handle it. He was speaking, or they speak, Rov Romi Leach LaPosha. He's speaking and speaking and speaking. You know, he says, now there are two parts to the wedding ceremony. First, the man gives his wife a ring, and they become engaged. And then, stage two, when they become married, by being under the chuppah. I said, this calls into question the validity of the marriage. Mamish. Because if she thinks that when she gets the ring, she's just becoming engaged, she's not married. I told him, you really shouldn't say this anymore, because it's just not true. What word should I use? Married! Even the word betrothed, which is always used, it's not so posh. A betrothed is more like an engagement. I used to use the word because they told me it doesn't mean anything. It just means eris. That's like what they used to teach when I was a kid. The boys would go to the Yiddish-speaking school. They'd say voracious and unfang. They didn't know what voracious was. They didn't know what an unfang was. So you know what betrothed means? They know what eris means. But then they said, no, betrothed is not from trust. It's kind of an engagement. So I stopped. They tried to stop using that word. They're married, but she's bebase. Bebeis ha'avol in her own house, not in her husband's house yet. Anyway, so coming back, so we have a situation. How could you postpone the? So I started giving a story. Just imagine the couple gets married, okay, and now there's a year till they're going to be really married. And they're going to the chuppah. So what they should be like the chassidim? Means they should get. See them now, they get engaged today, and they go away to Israel for a year to learn. They come back and they get married. That's how there's no way. You know that? Yeah. But they were never married, they were just engaged. If it breaks up, there's no get. Maybe, well, in the old days, when they were actually married, so they didn't think they didn't see each other for the whole year? I don't know. I don't know what they did exactly. Just imagine that they're going on a date, this quote married couple, but they're not really married yet, there's no chuppah yet, and it starts to rain. So he takes an umbrella, and he holds the umbrella over the two of them. Chivalry, no? It's raining. It's a chuppah. They became the suin, the two Adam saw. Now if you don't even need Adam for the suin, some say. What do you say? It's a chuppah, the umbrella. That's ridiculous, right? Why? Why is it ridiculous? All depends upon the minig. It all depends upon the minig. If the minig is, there's so many versions of what a chuppah is in the Shulchan Aruch, what nisuin is. Some say it's a yichud or a lebiya. Some say it's a badekin. Some say it's a talus over them. Some say it's a what we call a chuppah canopy. There are different versions, many different versions of what exactly is nisuin. But since they're all what they call a hachana to the bia, as Aruch HaShulchan said, it all depends upon the minig. And therefore it's not the pshat that I'm undergoing a process which is called nisuin and I'm postponing it for 10 minutes till after they read the ksuba and then they read and say the brachas. Or if it's a speech of 20 minutes. No. The whole idea of a chuppah canopy is erzatz beso. It's not really his house. It symbolizes his house. It only symbolizes his house when he wanted to. And over here, since he wanted to take effect only after the end of the Sheva Brachas, so the chuppah is like an umbrella. Send him an umbrella. That doesn't make the suit. Leave it an umbrella. They go to, you know, out here, they go under the, you know, they have these, the fancy hotels. Outside the hotel, they have a roof. So they're under the roof. That's a gewaldige chuppah. It's crazy. That's not a chuppah. You have to have in mind for it. And I think that's the pshat. Now, Yichud HaRoa Lebiya may be something objective. It's true. I'm not so sure that they have a right to go into a Yichud HaRoa Lebiya and postpone the Chalos for 20 more minutes. For whatever reason. I don't know why they would not do such a thing. Let's say he wants to have an anniversary on a certain Hebrew date. And they got a little, things went too fast. So they put him into the Yichud room before the sun sets. And he wants the anniversary to be the next day, which Rosh Chodesh or some other day that it's Mesugal. Say, honey, we're in this day. Just lock the door, we're in the room together. I don't want to take effect until 10 minutes from now, before we leave. Presumably wouldn't work. That's something which is objective. Not quite as objective as Bia. The Bia is Mamish. You can't play with it, as the Rav explained. You can't say, I'll call up Bol, I'll dask Bar Bia, because it has to work right away, and you can't postpone it. So, but Yichud HaRoa Lebiya might also be the same thing. But a chuppah, a canopy, all those we call hachanas, right? So he says, no. This is the Aruch HaShulchan, I'm going to read it to you. What the Aruch HaShulchan says. He writes as follows. When the Rambam says that brachos and amakvos, that's a chuppah, which means yichud, either bia l'shem nesuin, or yichud mamish, in a closed room, royal bia in that minute. But call a chuppah slavad elu, shehen rak hachonos lahoros al nesuin and igmarim l'ze azug, kol zman shelo birch olem sheva brachos, lo nigma nesuin. Meridik. So if we are correct, you can be misalik before the Birchas HaNisun. That's the minigun. I told you about Nissen Karelitz. Paskin that way. So meanwhile, the prenup is still a little bit of trouble because we do this earlier. That we again with the deemed that we read last week. But the Pischei Tshuva in Siman Tzadi Beis, if Karnal quotes the minig was mistalek before the Kiddushin. How can it be? So he quotes to look in Chavas Yor. End of Siman Nun, it's not the Chavas Yor himself. It's the Avodas HaGershuni. The Avodas HaGershuni, and I read you a verbatim quotation. Vafilu anu yodim shelo silik es asel ben Aronson nisuim, mikomakom mahani hoda also. Yesh the star siluk shalonu shenasu konam achupa amalismoch. As I mentioned to you last week, there could be a hodos baldin before the fact. It's a pella, no? Hodos baldin before the fact. So it works. I think that's something which is very, very important. I think it works. And that's why I think the waiver is effective based on this opinion quoted in the Avodas HaGashuni and Chavas Yor referred to in the Pischei Tshuva Siman Tzadi Beis of Kotan Aleph. And we can add another tziruf, I think I may have mentioned last week, that the husband's not entitled to her earnings in the first place. I mentioned that? Yes? For one of two reasons. I'll give you some Aram HaKomis now. In Beis Shmuel Siman Peis of Kotan Beis, it's Hadofa De'adchak, he's not entitled to. And the Ramah says she can say, "Eini no tell us more kesef, veini no se namosa." So she doesn't have to give the extra in any event. And anyway, if you look at Osher Poskim, they get an impression whatever else works outside the home, he's not entitled to. Some machlokes nowadays. But anyway, we left to this very interesting question. Maybe the wife can say, "Eini zonus veini osa." Perhaps. What'll be if the husband owes her the $150 a day for sure, and whether she owes him her earnings is a matter of machlokes. What's the pshat? So the same called the Mishnah Saksuba is a machlokes aposkim. Who wins? Who's the muchzuk? Should we say that he wins? He's the muchzuk. Money's mine. No, you have an absolute obligation to pay her. You want to get out of it by saying it's an offsetting obligation of her to you. You got to prove that. I had a case just now in the Bezdin. I was the appeals judge. I mentioned once before I was an appeals, judge. A guy owes money because they broke a release and weren't able to get a new tenant until February. That was the attestation. The guy now says, who said it's true? Maybe he got a new tenant before February. And therefore, I want to keep the money. I'm also mechavel of a riot. So the first line of my appeals decision was, there's a definite obligation. You want to get out with an offset, you got to prove the offset. The other one is considered to be a mukhzuk, not you, even though the money's in your pocket. That's the question over here, which the Mishnah Saksuba and Simon Yud Beis talks about whether it's true or not true. Okay, gentlemen, any question we just said? Yes. How much it costs her to live independently?
Maybe it means to support her in your house. The assumption is she's living in your house.
Well, that is true. In other words, that's what's called revach besa. Revach besa means.
Can we borrow your money?
Of course. That means that, you know, it's just cheaper by the dozen. You know,
right.
That's true. But at the same time, a person is permitted by Jewish law to obligate himself to support his wife at any level that he wants, as long as it's not a crazy exaggeration. Rabbi Zalman Nechemiah told you, said even in a hotel, which is wild. I mean, you get a tremendous amount of money in a hotel these days. Even though he said $50. In 1988, you couldn't get a hotel for $50 a day. What does it cost to say a hotel? What?
With radio hotel. And where?
One-star hotel with kosher food. That's your food. I mean, a hotel.
Holiday Inn average around $120.
That's just for a bed.
The Avenue Plaza in Borough Park is like $150, $180 a night.
Just for food?
No, for the room. And you'll have some breakfast. No food.
No food. So after that, of course, it's $20 to eat. It's going to end up being $200 a day. He said $50.
Or more if I tax it on top, it's going to be $250 a night.
Right? $250 a night. That's in Borough Park. It's not even in the Hilton. So, the kids said, if it's a quarter of Zav and Nechemiah, you're going to obligate even to that amount a day. I'm not so sure why that's true. Hotel? He said, why not? Hotel? What's wrong with a hotel? People like hotels. Anyway. So, but as I mentioned, I think to you last time, the obligation of the man in Mizonos is the higher of the two standards of living, either her family standard of living and his present standard of living. Her family, it's not completely clear when it's measured, but pashtus is measured at the time of the marriage, because she's used to that. So if the parent family was rich and became poor, or poor and became rich, it should be irrelevant. It should be the higher of the two standards of her standard when she got married in her parents' home. That's one. And two is his present standard of living, right now. That's the push-up shot. He's obligated to support it to the higher of those two standards. Now, whatever that is, I can't figure that one out exactly. You can probably figure it out what that may be. So we think that $150 a day is not an exaggeration in the societies in which we live. I still don't think so. Not new to the hotel. Just the basic expenses.
So how does it work with the kollel where the wife is the primary earner and the husband is much lesser earner?
Okay, very good. It's an excellent question. So the answer is as follows. The kollel fellow has no standard of living. He gets paid a few dollars from the kollel, so that's nothing.
Well, I could be looking very well
at
his wife.
You bet his wife's to be an attorney. Now, that also won't count. But if the wife had a higher standard of living in her home when she married him, just before she married him, he is halakhically required to support her to the tune of that standard of living. Now, the fact that he's not doing it is by mutual consent. She's saying, I want you to learn the kollel, and I'll do whatever I have to do to support the family. mutual consent. Once they're no longer living together, there's a divorce spat, she has the right to say, you got to support me to the tune that I was, you know, living before I married you. That's standard living. You are required to give me that amount of money.
So in those kinds of circumstances, typically would be impossible.
He said, I don't have it.
Sure, you don't have
it. Sure you have it. Give me the get. I'll marry someone else who does have it.
Yeah.
That's what we spoke about last time. And I mentioned Rabbi Sternberg did not come out against that. He sort of vacillated about it. Okay, any other questions about this? Yeah. Yes? Huh?
This is an artificial Chiyuv Mezonos, or this is the Chiyuv Mezonos that always existed?
So here's the answer. The Chiyuv Mezonos that we are coming in the prenup could be a Chiyuv Mezonos within our Torah, either with the Raisa, with the Rabbanah, whatever Mezonos is, because, as we mentioned before, there's an obligation for him to support her, Olimo Veni Oredesimo.
Isn't that only in the house?
So I'm explaining to you. Does that obligation exist when they're no longer under the same roof?
Right.
So that's looking Simon I and Sifyud Beis, depends whose fault it is. If it's his fault, the obligation continues. If not, not. But we're not going to fail to figure that one out. The whole idea of the premium is to plug that hole. Right? Someone sent me this week, Rabbi Zev Elef sent me an article to the 1984 Jewish World. I should put that on the Maram. I could put that in the email that too. Remind me, you give me an email. I'll email it to you. I'm going to look at it. It's hysterical. Hysterical. You know, he's expert in archives. Then Rabbi Tendler. Rabbi Tendler says, write the Ksuba. Shalom. What's the problem? I didn't mention to you last time. Just translate the Ksuba and it's binding. But the problem is, this is the problem. He'll say it's her fault that she left the house and I'm putting him as honest with the next Ksuba. He's right. Then they have. I almost forgot about this. There was a man named Rabbi Abner Weiss, who was a colleague of mine in Rivoli at the time, in 1984, when this happened, 83, 84, he was head of a commission of the RCA to have a prenup. He went to Rabbi Jolti. Rabbi Jolti, yeah. Rabbi Jolti wrote a tshuva to Nav Paradis, Tavshin Mem Gimel, 1983. He passed away shortly thereafter, he passed away young, in which he discusses the issue of what's called Mukeves Li Nose Machmoso. Which means the brand new din, like Megureshes, Ve'ena Megureshes, you know the Gemara and the Rashi, Ksubas and Bava Metzia, that he has to give her amount of money because she can't marry somebody else. So he has to give her the money. So he wanted to say, in those dollars of 1983, $250 a day. And that was way more than any expenses. It was called then liquidated damages. Any people in law school here? No one?
Three times.
So no? What's liquidated damages? Tell us.
Fixed sum of damages.
It's not quantifiable. It's not quantifiable.
It's in place of trying to quantify.
Right. Right, exactly. Damage. So they have liquidated damage of $250 a day. Shine. Rabbi Jolti thought it might be good. Rabbi Gartner, in that same piece that he gave Rabbi Zalman Nechemia's piece, criticizes Rabbi Jolti's piece. Who said that's true? Who said that's true? That you can make such a high sum for Megureshes, Ve'eda Megureshes, Mukeves Linosei Machmosa. And a few other quibbles with that. So the way the story was written up there, I had forgotten all this. It's an ancient memory by me. That the RCA gave it out and then pulled it back. And in the marriage, things haven't changed much in 30 years. In the article, it says over there, Rabbi Soloveitchik was for it, Rabbi Soloveitchik was against it. Gotta love it. And there was an Av Bezdin of the Bezdin of America in its early iteration. The Bezdin of America was established, I think, in the 50s already. Primarily for Gittin. That's what they did. For the better part of I don't know, 40 years, they were just for really doing Gittin. Hardly ever any Torah, but it was a very important service. I'm not chalila belittling it. Very important. Do Gittin, there were all kinds of charlatans in those days. There's a guy, Rabinowitz from Brooklyn, he wrote Gittin that were nothing, just wrote completely puzzled. I remember Rabbi Schoenfeld railing about it back in over 50 years ago, railing about this guy, Rabinowitz from Brooklyn. I remember screaming. fake it. So having the bezin of the he was active with the RCA, you understand. He wanted to make sure everyone come to the to his bezin. But it was true that this it was a guy who was a shal. There were some good people too, Rabbi Bick, Rabbi Libis to him. Rabbi Melo Shecht gave his own git at one point in time. He was also part of the RCA in and out. Anyway, but that was what they were doing. And Rabbi Steinberg, who was known as the Broder Rov, was the Rosh Bezdin, I believe, for 30 years. I think, from, I don't know when the Bezdin was incorporated, maybe 1957. I'm just throwing, look it up. Until he passed away. Look it up in the Bezdin of America if you can find it when they were first incorporated. So from 19, let's guess, 1957 to 87, he was when he passed away. I met him only once, 1986. We were online together for the marching, the Chag HaSmicha, in the Lamport Auditorium. I knew he was. I never met him before. That's where I started with the Broder Rav. Big Hadras Ponim. He was, lived in the West Side. Sure, he was a Chacham. Yeah, a Chosham of Talmud Chacham. Anyway, so the article said, shut down. And the executive said, it's being held back temporarily. So from 1984 to 2016, the temporary nature is still being held back. Still being held back.
Is it Din Mazik or Din Mazonis? Mukeres.
It's not necessarily called Mazonis. That's a big question. Is it Mazonis? Not Mazonis. What about the earnings in that kind of a case? Long shtick looks terrible about it. I'm not going to go into it now. So that's what it says. And who attacked these obligations? Rabbi Bleich. He was attacking things already in 1984. He had his own system, which is a little complicated. And the Rabbi Dick, who was an attorney, had even a much more complicated thing. So they interviewed these two people. So they said, Rabbi Dick, sure, it's complex. A lot of life things are things in life are complex. So what? He's a, I met him once. He's a very fine man. Zichron Lerach was a very fine attorney who had a lot of good things for the Jewish community. He was called Kolpa in the old days. He was a very, very good person. He was very complicated. Rabbi Black was a little bit less, but also pretty complicated. And they never flew. But Rabbi Black said something which is important. Even if they're right, you can't do it on your own. No one person can just say, just do it this way. That's exactly what Rav Zalman Nechemiah said. Don't do it. I mean, it's a Mitzvah Tzimbalist. I'm a Mitzvah Tzimbalist. I'm a Mitzvah Schwartz. I leave it. I had five Chashev Rabbanim who all said the same things. That's not just one person, no matter how great he is. That's why I think why the one that we helped formulate has been used by many people. So others are not being used too much to the best of my knowledge. Could be that someone's still using the liquidated damages one, at least one rabbi, maybe, but I'm not sure if it's still being used. I don't know. I think it was being used when I got first involved 25 years ago. It was still being used, even though the RCA pulled it back. I said, I'm not pulling it back, I'm going to use it anyway. Okay. It is what it is. Yes?
You mentioned that Nisuin goes after the Minhag. Who sets the Minhag? I mean, Minhag by the Hassan himself? That
no, point. By the community. For example, I'm told that the Rabbi Vadi writes in his Chuvis that Minig of the Anshei Eidot and Mizrach, they don't have Yichud. Emes? No Yichud. Oh, it's called scandalous. No Yichud? That's why he writes in his Chuvis that for us, the Nisuin is not until after they go home to their house or, quote, hotel, wherever they go to the. I'm not sure if it's where the hotel works, but let's say they go home, all right, it's their room, it's their house. And then, but she's not in the sewer the whole night. She's not in the sewer yet, because there's no yichud. And that's why he's trying to justify the fact that in their circles, the woman would not wear a full, proper head covering at the chuppah itself. He tries to justify it on that basis. Okay? But Achenu Ashkenazim, he writes, they have yichud. So you have to have a full head covering. It's not enough to wear the veil that we have because you can see through it. V'chule, v'chule. Our meaning is based on the fact, one of two things. Either at the chi of the raisa, assuming it's the raisa for the moment, pashup shatling mong subas, of covering the hair takes effect only after the first bia. Why that? Because it's derived from sota, and to be sota eligible, you need k'dimas shchivas baal shchivas abo. And there were those who today have a new custom, they take everything off. I was at a wedding just recently. Everything came off. She would dance the whole night at her own chuppah with nothing on her head. Zero. and they follow this mahalach. Or they quote something for a Moshe, something, some half a quotation, not sure exactly what he said. But there's another way out of this conundrum, which will lead to a different conclusion. Namely, that if you look at all the wedding albums, all of them, until, you'll tell me the blank how many years ago, everyone, even women who never covered their hair once in their whole life as a married woman, except them being in shul, at their wedding they always wore a veil with this, and had a headpiece on during the entire wedding. Look at the pictures. Pictures don't lie, unless you make them lie. Pictures don't lie. Right, do a study. You go home and you find out when someone got married 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you'll see, unless I'm making a mistake, there's something on their head. So we can argue that a level of Daraisa, that something on their head is sufficient. It's not Pruas Rosh. It's like Yosef Inuma V'Rosh HaPerua. When the Ksuba Tezvav, Tezayin, the Gemara talks about it. And there some of the Mefarshim say that even though the hair sticks out, but since the head is covered, a level of Daraisa, that's sufficient. Okay. So then you have no heter to let it go without anything on the head. So I'm upset. I was at a wedding just recently with the Masada Kedushin. I thought I made another mistake. I didn't want to say anything. They called me up for a bracha. I said, there's no veil. I tell you my story about last week about the no veil, into the no veil story. I was once at a wedding. It was out of town. I'm in a car right away. And the Mesaglish was a Rebbe from our yeshiva. Very, very, very choshev a Rosh Yeshiva. And, I was there from whatever. And there's no veil. Nothing. No bedeket. There was no bedeket. The whole night, no bedeket. I asked the Rosh Hashiva, what's this? The man was from a German extraction. He said, well, the Yekka Sheminik is no bedeket. I said, my friend, you were duped. But the Yekka Sheminik no bedeket may have meant that they don't make a public bedeket like we do with the chosn comes and dances. And they do it privately, and maybe the rabbi bedeks the kallah. That existed in certain parts of Germany, that's true. But to have an unbedecked kala, that she should be under the chuppah with nothing on her face, never in my life saw such a thing. So I guess I didn't tell you the story, I'll tell you it now. I was driving home from that wedding, my wife and I were in the back, and another couple was driving us in the front. So the young lady says to her husband, Yosef, did you see what I was under the chuppah? And he's driving his car, What? Says, didn't you see that the kala had nothing on her face? Says, yeah, I saw. I noticed it. But why? Why wasn't her face covered? Says, it's simple. Keeps driving. She didn't cover her face because he didn't cover his face. Push it. It was 100% right. It was one of those egalitarians. But that they duped the Masada Kedushin. Okay. But this time, there was a Bedekin. There was a Bedekin. I saw the Bedekin. So I asked him, what happened to the... Well, when they gave her the wine, it was a confusion. They pulled back the veil, and they never put it back, and that's it. Okay, they're still married, but it's incorrect. You should supposed to be bedecked. Really, in theory, the bedeckim, according to some, is actually nisuin, and there's some briskers who want a day bedeckim. In my opinion, it's not required. The rav did not require it at my wedding, to the best of my recollection. Because it's not chal then. How can you have nisuin without kiddushin? So even if the bedekin is nisuin, it doesn't take effect until he puts the ring on the finger. All right, you have kiddushin with nisuin kiyachad. If that's what they want, going back to our earlier conversation. Okay. So these are very significant issues, and you know, people make mistakes all the time, and I'm sure I make my share of mistakes.
So you're saying
Yichud
is accepted Minhag now?
Today we do. Ashkenazim always have Yichud, Haroah Labiyah, unless she's a Nida. If a Nida, it's a problem. I told you it's an avoidable problem, but they just can avoid it. But it happens, in the old days it happened. I remember, I don't know if I told you this story. There was an older woman from my community, an older single, who was getting married, and we were at the wedding. I really didn't know her that well, because they didn't have her in my shul, but you know, a little from the neighborhood, so she was marrying an older fellow also. They were both, you know, somewhat old, but not that old, maybe late 20s. I don't remember exactly how old they were. And then it turned out it was a chuppas nida. So she came to us. I said, you know, you can't have a yichud. What do you mean? We've been conducting ourselves appropriately for this X amount of months that we're engaged. They don't trust us now? I said, listen, this Torah says, nalacha. Well, what I will never have the European Masada Kiddushin, who was the chassan's father's shtibler of somewhere, and I have no faith in it. I don't want him to find out. It's okay if you know about it. She told us anyway, Chuppas Nida. I said, you know what? I'll hide in the Yichud room. What are we going to do? So, you know, they get married and they break the glass, and I run to the Yichud room and I hide behind the door. So, you know, Sammy, it's behind the door, like in the movies, you know. So when the rabbi was a good rabbi, so I was in the bathroom, behind the bathroom door. So the rabbi walks in and he opens the bathroom door. And I think it maybe touched my shoes, but I wasn't exactly sure. And, you know, okay. And then just before he left, the rabbi, he opened the bathroom door one more time. I think he was trying to say, meanwhile, I don't know if they even knew I was there. So after they left, and they're here, they're in their room by themselves, so I sort of whistled. They should know someone in the bathroom. And then they left. Then I had to wait, you know, like in the movie, that I waited until everyone left, then I snuck out of the room. And my sister Shoya, it really happened. It really happened. And the chuppas nida is not pleasant. I remember once got a phone call from a Talmud of mine who was getting married on Sunday out of town. Calls me Motzi Shabbos that the woman, she became a nida. Oh man, it was a wild situation. And they didn't want anyone to know. They were supposed to have Shevet Brachos that Shabbos here in Washington Heights in the yeshiva, and the yichud problems. What are we gonna do? Anyway, they came to my house, right? The chassan was in one place and the kala was in another place. And we tried to make us some Shevet Brachos on a Friday night. No one showed up. We didn't have a minyan. We only made Asher Bora. You ever been in Asher Bora, Suda? One time in my life, I had an Asher Bora, Suda. Okay. Another time, my wife made a shidduch, because it was back many years. We lived still in the Heights. And there was a chuppas nida. And so the new couple had an apartment right down the next building. So the first night, Nebuch, I said, we didn't have a car, but we ended up driving the chassan kala home. Nebuch, the kala stayed in our house, and the chassan went to their apartment, the next building. She was pretty good for a couple of nights until she just, basket case, crying. That's when I first learned about the difficulty that a woman has, especially in chuppas nida. It's very difficult. And it's avoidable. You got to just use a little common sense. I once got a call from a yichud room in out of town. She became a nida. Mamish, a yichud room is Baltimore, I think it was. I had to tell them what to do. And once got the following call. If I repeat myself, you'll forgive me. It was a certain wedding. I wasn't even invited to the wedding. I crashed. I was in the neighborhood and I knew the chassan, and I walked in just to dance with him a little bit. Fine. Another rabbi from my yeshiva, who was his rabbi in yeshiva, was his Messiah Kedusha. The phone rings at 4:30 in the morning. Something like that. Some crazy hour, 4:30 in the morning. These days I don't even hear it. But those days I was still hearing things. It's like 4:30. Hello? Yeah. This is Mazel Tov. You know, I reckon I'm my rabbi said I can call you. Thanks. What happened? He was staying in a fancy Manhattan hotel and she became a Nida. So I said, he described the room to me. So you know, these fancy hotels, there's a lobby with a hallway with the real main door. But there's also in the back, there's another service stairway where they come in and the help comes to clean, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, they shouldn't be visited. I said, you know what? The back door, leave it ajar. And sleep on the floor, because there was only one bed. We make a let, you know, it's not really yichud, because you never know who's going to come in. He tells me that, sure enough, I was right. At 6:30 in the morning, some cleaning person comes in, sees him on the floor. He thinks these crazy people just got married. They're on the floor. But the psak was right, he wasn't yichud. They walked in. There are all kinds of stories that we can tell, but we're not interested in telling stories. Hey, it solves the problems. It works. But the right dosage. You have to give three pills. If you take less than that, it's not going to work. And it breaks through and it could be a disaster. Okay. Any other questions before I go on? All right. Let's talk a little bit about a ksuba. A ksuba.
Really?
Yeah.
You mentioned the Asher Bara Suda.
Yeah.
Does that mean that if there isn't
a... No minion.
Then you just say the
Bracha Asher. Yeah, it's a Gemara. It's a Gemara. It's in Shulchan Aruch. But if there's no Panu Chadoshes. Could be 20 people there. There's no Panu Chadoshes. You don't see. You only say Asher Bara. Am I correct? That's what I mean. What's Panu Chadoshes? That's a machlok between Tosfos and the Rambam. Tosfos holds that Panu Chadoshes adds Simcha. Adds Simcha. That's why you say Shavuot Brachos all over again. Tosfos holds from the course of Medrash that on Shabbos you don't need Panu Chadoshes, because the Shabbos itself is Panu Chadoshes. Sounds like a very, very kind of almost a Kabbalistic notion. But we're going to explain it out Derech HaNigla, that it's an extra level of Simcha. And that's what the Poskim say, that Friday night is one level, Shabbos is also, but Shalosh Shudas is not so posh. You have to have a drasha, things of this nature. Okay, fine. That's Tosfos Shita. The Rambam Shita is totally different. The Rambam holds that the Sheva Brachas are part of benching. We'll come to that a little bit later. They're part of benching. And the Sheva Brachas are recited to be motzi the Panu Chadoshes. Because since he comes in, he wasn't at the wedding. He wasn't at any previous suda where they said the Sheva Brachas. So he has an obligation to recite Sheva Brachas, because for him it's not the chos, not the kala. This stranger who just walked in for the first time, he has the obligation. The people who make the bracha are in effect making it on his behalf. Same as the Masada Kiddush makes the bracha on behalf of the chosin, and maybe the kala too. That's a question. Who's obligating the bracha? The chosin only, or the chosin and the kala? That's big ramifications. Rabbi Shechter writes in one of his pieces that it depends who has the right to pick the Masada Kiddush. The Masada Kiddush says the bracha, so is it the chosin has a prerogative because it's only his bracha? Maybe the kala has too. Maybe the people have. Why the people? Because there were many who claim that the bracha of the erusin is not the rosh. It's not a birchas hamitzvah for the chosin and or the kala, but it's a birchas shevach v'otah for everyone who's there. So they can pick them. Imagine have a vote. Who wants the Masada? Who votes Rabbi X? Who votes Rabbi Y? Well, that's only Rabbi Shechter's theoretical constructs. But. What happens if one of the people or both of them can't hear a serious child? There was someone we knew from our yeshiva's general community. He had a son who couldn't hear and the kala couldn't hear. Do you make the birchas eris? If it's for the community, the answer is yes. If it's for the people, they don't hear, the answer is no. Serious question. Anyway, so to go back to the Sheva Brachos discussion. So Rambam, of course, left out the idea of Shabbos being Sheva Brachos. That's ridiculous. He would never call it Shabbos to Rambam. It's not the Rambam starts to call such a thing. But here's the real question. Could any stranger be Ponu Chadoshes? Quote to the Rambam, yes. Quote to Tosfos, no. It has to be somebody who will increase the level of joy of the Chosn and or the Kala. That's what you need. Someone who's a chosh of a person in their eyes. You know, are you familiar with the Gemara? The Gemara is a Masechta Moed Katan, the opposite extreme. That if they're Ponim Chadoshes, it's a question of the Ovel B'yom Sheini putting on tefillin. What does it mean? It means the same thing. When a person is in Avelus and sees somebody he hasn't seen until now, it creates an emotional response. You ever been at a shiva house? Someone walks in, all of a sudden they start bawling, they're crying on each other, they jump. You ever seen that? What changed? What changed? A new person walked in and they hadn't had a chance to cry out with each other. So there's an emotional response is triggered when a new person walks in. It happened to me once. Unbelievable story happened to me once. When my mother passed away back in 1991, so it was right after Shavuos. Soon as I got up from Shiva, I had all these weddings to go to. My Talmidim were getting married, the peak season. I went to all the weddings. I just came for the chuppah, left right after the chuppah. But being June, you know, this with the you wanted to have a marav, I was a chiyuv. So I remember that yesterday. I remember who the talmid was. That I was at the wedding after the chuppah, I daven marav, and after marav, after I said kaddish. So one of my, you know, people who I'm quite close with, it wasn't like today emails. He was unaware of my loss. This is weeks later. Unaware of my loss. So he walks over to me after Marv and says, "Whoa!" I said, "Well, you didn't know. My mother passed away." And Mama started to cry on the spot. I'm not a lady. I didn't hug anybody. I just started to cry. That's where I learned the idea of Panu Chadoshes creating a new emotional response. So too, on the other end, Panu Chadoshes should elicit an emotional response of Simcha on behalf of the Chosn and or the Kala, and that's the trigger of Sheva Brachos according to Shita Tosfos. Yes?
Could you even be a non-Jew?
I don't think so. The question could be a woman. Could be a woman. That's a question. Of course, all the poskim say no, but I don't know if they're right. We live in a generation that women are somehow just some circles marginalized. An interesting question happened just recently. The Kala getting married walked into shul. Right? Did you say tachnun that day? I thought the answer was no. No, Kala's in shul. Oh, let's say even during the Sheva Brachos, the chosn got sick, and then the Kala walks in. So I thought the answer was no, but I'm a Medernisha. Medernisha, another place of what? Chasvil, Haske, what? Kidding. Anyway, I had an interesting story. I'm happy to tell the story today. Why? I have a nephew, my brother's son, made a bris today in the Holy City. So when he got married, I was in Eretz Yisrael for his chasana. It was Chanukah time, and I was there for the yeshiva. You know, that I made coordinator at that time. I was there at Shabbos, and Motzei Shabbos was the Sheva Brachos in my son's house for my nephew, his cousin. Fine. And I asked Rabbi Usher Weiss, Shalita, if he wouldn't mind coming by to be mechaber at the Sheva Brachos. He said, he has the west to go, but if I can't pick him up, take him to Sheva, he'll come, and he can't stay, but he'll come, he'll speak. You know, see, I picked him up. This is Ramat Shlomo. I went to Ramot, picked him up, brought him in. Comes in, of course, with a shtreimel, it's Motzei Shabbos, you know. And it was Mesameach Gvaldik. He was the only person who wasn't at the wedding. It was just really for the family. So came to Sheva Brachos. We needed somebody else. So my son called his next door neighbor. No one knew his next door neighbor. So in the car, Rabbi Usher Weiss on the way, I said, "You know what? I have the following cheshbon. This should work the choladeus. According to the Bali HaTosfos, you, the Rav, are the Pono Chadoshos, because you're going to come in Misameach. He came in with a big Adam Godel came and spoke. It's Gevaldik. According to the Rambam Shita, the next door neighbor. So you don't have to stay. He liked my cheshbon. Not everybody agrees to the cheshbon. He liked it. I like it too. The holidays. Fine. So, did I answer your question? Did I answer it?
Well, we're part of the wedding. You know, is it just that they missed the show?
Oh, what do you have to not be there for? Yeah. Some big machlekes. Big machlekes. The Poshim Shad is, it's the Nisuin that count. And all the Erisin a year before, the Nisuin is what counts. I was at two weddings in the same place where I thought they blew it. The Mamash blew it. Two different Rabbanim, two different circumstances. I thought they both blew it. It's in a certain place in New Jersey where there's no possibility of having a what's called a chupa tachas kippas hashamayim. You know, as it says in the Ramah, the minhag, in order that they should be porim rov, we just read this morning, kechochvei hashamayim l'rov. If you went to shul this morning, so they get married under the stars. It's daytime. The stars are there. We just can't see them because of the sun, but they're stuck. So my first quip is that today, in some circles, they should stop doing it. They don't want to have so many children. So they should get married inside. Okay, that's just it. Anyway, but two different weddings I was at where they went outside for the Kiddushin. No one can hear, no one can see. One of them was actually an aid Kiddushin, one of them. It's crazy, no one could see. And they came back in for the chuppah, for the nisuin, in the hall that people could see them. Huh? I thought the nisuin has to be tachas kippas hashamayim, not the kiddushin. But they got it backwards. Just thinking what I think. Look at the small print. Anyway, so, again, your question one more time, say it again.
What part do you have to miss?
So if I'm right, if you were there for the Kiddushin and left before the Nisuin, you can still count for Panach HaDoshes. But if for the Nisuin, you can no longer count. Some disagree, so you have to be by the Sudas Chasana. But I Sufik Drabbanan, Sufik Brochas Lahokal. I would not make a consider a Panach HaDoshes if you was there for the Nisuin. There's some guys, they come to a wedding, but they come to Hak. You know, when the chuppah is going on, they're in the back, even outside. So the guy comes, quote unquote, the chuppah only, but during the chuppah he's outside the whole time talking. And he comes, you know, and I don't know if that, maybe he would count upon the chadashis. The hackers. I don't know. I'm not sure. You have to think about that. So we saw about the Yonah the Yom, I told you about the bris that happened today in Yerushalayim. So there's a wedding tonight. Lakewood, New Jersey. There's a wedding in Lakewood, New Jersey. Why is there a wedding in Lakewood, New Jersey? The chosn comes from Queens, and the kala comes from Manhattan. Why is a wedding in Lakewood, New Jersey? What's the answer? Certainly cost effective. They have nice.
That's not the answer.
I think that's the answer. I think that's the reason. Anyway, I'm not going. I think that's not right. People should make quote destination weddings in Lakewood because it's a very, very long trip. It's a very, very long trip. So if someone lives in Lakewood or, you know, around that part of the world, okay, I understand. But I'm saying it for a reason. Someone called me not that long ago. The person is from the Teaneck area. The other side is from way out of town, way, way out. And they called me up, you know, I said, all right, if they make the wedding in Lakewood. And they expected me to say yes, because I always say yes to people. I said, no. I said, it's not right. It's not right to schlep people, schlep hundreds of people to go all the way down there. I said, make it in Muncie. I mean, it costs a little bit more, but it's not that much more. You know, my son told me that he lives in Ramat Bet Shemesh, and it was the wedding of two close friends of his, both from Ramat Bet Shemesh. Where was the wedding? Kiryat Sefer. Same idea. They have these, you know, these Haredi community have these cheap wedding halls. Everyone had to schlep an hour. So he's kibbutzing, but it's not just a kibbutz. Everyone should chip in a little bit, just the gas money. And you can save, if everyone gave the gas money to the Chosn Kali, you'd save money. Yeah?
But can I ask every question about that?
Go.
Okay, because, you know, there was actually a time in Toronto where there was discussion about putting caps, make it easier and not crazier.
They should.
Hard.
They didn't, the Aguda did it here in New York. They made official caps, which were violated from the get-go.
So I understand.
The answer is what we have to do. Not me. I'm not such a big Askin. Got to make places which do this. Why must there be a label like that? Why can't it be in Muncie? There are all places in Muncie like that, I think. Williamsburg, Muncie, they're the place like that. They have the same package deals, you know.
I understand
Lakewood is very. Okay, so I don't understand why it has to be more reasonable label than in Muncie. Explain to me logically. Is there logic behind it? They're all in schools.
What?
They're all in schools. They build schools and they all have catering halls.
We were at the Hobie wedding, that place. Remember the wedding that, that Irwin made in Lakewood, that big.
Right. The base Fager, I think, whatever it was.
Yeah, whatever it was. Big place. That's right. A very cost effective place to do
right.
A place, right? And
right.
Not expensive land. It's not like Muncie. Even Muncie must be more expensive. I mean, the actual real estate, the cost of real estate must be more.
I don't see why that has to have such a long term impact forever. No, I just don't get it. I'm not a finance person. I don't know. But I'm just mentioning it to you that I have an objection in principle. The people who, again, I can't argue with them. There are people who from L.A. make their weddings in New York. They save money. Now, one of the things, oh, so people won't come. It'd be great. That's who will come. If that's your intention, so, you know, make it far. The further away you make, the better. Make it in Eretz Yisrael. Now, truth is, I made two weddings in Eretz Yisrael. One, the Kalos lived in Yerushalayim. No one can. The other one, Kala lived in the west side of Manhattan. But she, from her youth, she always dreamt to get married in Yerushalayim. She wasn't trying to save pennies. So it was beautiful. We had a wedding in Yerushalayim. Obviously, from my side, almost nobody came. Whether it would have come had it been in the New York area. Fine. Whatever. A klal when it comes to marriages, weddings. Whatever you can, give in to the other side. Whatever you can possibly give in to the other side. I've given in to the other side on just about everything. Even if it's against my principles. I'll end with this. One of my principles at weddings is no alcohol. I've seen guys go off to get drunk and kids start. It's terrible. It's a chil Hashem. And I never allowed alcohol at any of my kids' weddings. The first one we made, somebody walked in with a bag. Yeah, from the other side, they heard somebody, they brought their own bag. I kid you not, alcohol. I kid you not. But the other wedding, the mechutin said, I don't drink at all. It's true. But where I come from, I have to have a bar. Have to have a bar. So I was left with two principles. One principle is no alcohol, no bar. Other was do what the chutzpah wants. I was left with a. I was stuck. There was a bar. Okay, we'll stop here. Maybe next week is the last week. So you have to tell me what we have to still talk about. I have no idea what. You'll let me know. And there may be some more Marimah comments perhaps coming out. Okay. I have no idea what this is.
It's off or on?
It's on.
It's on?
Yeah. Okay. Do you know when to put it up?